Road Trekking, episode number 5.
It's Stephanie from Crystal River, Florida. I'm very excited that you're going to be doing a podcast on RVing. I have a Road Trek Ranger, which is a 19-foot RV, and I just finished spending almost 6 months full-time in it. I had warned my kids, if they have grandkids for me, I'll be up in their driveway, and that's what I was doing. So the small lifestyle of a road trek is perfect for me. I love your blog, roadtrekking.com. I've gotten ideas on organizing, honest product reviews, and I'm so excited for the how-tos. As a solo woman traveler, it's perfect for me. Good luck with the podcast. Thanks again for everything you do.
It's time for Road Trekking, the podcast. Traveling North America in a small motor home. Exploring, camping, boondocking, embracing the RV lifestyle. And sharing tips and where to go and how to keep things running right. Here's award-winning journalist Mike Wendland and his network of road trekking reporters.
Well, welcome back to the program, everybody. I am Mike Wendland, and this is a show that celebrates the RV lifestyle. And whether you have a small motorhome like the road trek Jennifer and I travel in, a big RV, a fifth wheel, a pop-up, heck, even if you're just thinking about getting an RV, this show is for you. We talk about getting out there, about enjoying God's creation, about exploring the countryside, sharing tips on keeping our RVs running right and using the right gear and technology to enhance our camping and RVing experience. That is what road trekking is all about, the RV lifestyle. Well, we are delighted to be back. And again, I have to start with a thank you. Thank you to so many people from so many different places who have been listening to the Road Trekking RV podcast from all over the world. I've had email from Australia, from Japan, from Europe, from South America, even from South Africa, from people who've been listening to this program. And I thank you. And I ask you, if you do listen, you know, we're starting out this podcast. It's always hard to get noticed and to get the, so we display and show up on the search results. Please, if you do listen to us, would you leave us a review on iTunes? If you, it only takes a second to leave a rating and a review. I would really appreciate that, especially as we're getting started. There's on the show notes on the roadtrekking.com blog, there's a list here on how you can leave us a rating and a review. We are delighted. We got a lot of material today for us, some really interesting stuff. A little later on, we're going to talk about a subject I get a lot of email about. You know, we are so dependent on the internet as we travel around the country, so many people. So we're going to talk about what do you do when the cell phones don't work and you can't get access, or more common, when you're at a RV park and the Wi-Fi. Is there any place in the world that has worse Wi-Fi than most RV parks? What do you do? Well, we're going to talk about an option that an increasing number of RVers are turning to, and that is satellite internet for the RV. Satellite internet. What's involved in that? We've got a great interview coming up a little later on in the program. I want to also point out that this episode of Road Trekking the RV podcast is brought to you by Van City RV, where they service and sell only Class B motorhomes from all of the major manufacturers, and the Good Sam Club. Good friends, good fun, great savings. Join today. Well, what are we going to do today? Well, we're going to talk in a moment about boondocking, which is one of the most favorite RV activities that Jennifer and I do. In fact, we just got back from a boondocking trip. Yes, even this cold weather up in the upper Midwest where we're from, we were out there. We've got an interesting listener question who wants to know about why he should get a small motorhome or an RV instead of maybe a car with high gas mileage, and kind of what are the differences between a conversion van and a Class B RV. So we'll talk about that. Have lots of RV news that we're going to look at, including something that you'll want to check in. What is the long range weather forecasts for the winter as we approach, the traditional migration of the snowbirds has begun. If you are near anywhere in the north and you are near an interstate and you look at that interstate, you're seeing more and more RVs headed south, either to Florida or the Southwest or Arizona. What's the long range weather forecast for all over the country? And then we'll also take a look in our news section on the fastest growing RV demographic out there. For technology today, I've got a great tip. For those of you who use Apple or Macintosh computers, man, I have an app, a time-saving app that you are going to love. I can't help you out if you're in an Android or different one, but for the Mac and Apple crowd, I've got a great tech tip for you. So all that coming up, plus our bucket list destination of the week. So we've got lots of things that we'll be talking about. Right now, I want to talk about boondocking. That just sounds fun. Remember that old, who was it that sang that song? Out in the boondocks. Anyway, that's where we spend a lot of our time. We just got back, Jennifer and I, and Ty, the Norwegian elk hound. We just came back from the woods of northern Michigan, where we spent Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday boondocking. Now, what is boondocking, if you wonder what this? Well, that means basically being off the grid, out in the middle of some place where there's no restroom facility other than what is in your own RV. In other words, there's not a building with the showers and all that stuff. You've got a shower in your own RV and use the facilities in it. There's no electrical hookup other than what you have with your RV. And there's no water hookup other than what you bring in your RV. So that's a big part of it. Some people call it dry camping, meaning no hookups, no connections to anything, no running water nearby. Although we had a river about 100 feet above the banks that we were camped on. That was running, but we couldn't access it. We didn't need to. We brought our own. And getting out away from people generally is the idea. Now, there's different kinds of boondocking. There's dispersed camping, which we also like to do on Bureau of Land Management properties out west. There is a lot of dispersed camping in national forest campgrounds where you can camp free or almost free. Also in state forest campgrounds. In our case, we were on some private land that bordered a vast tract of state land, but it was about a 200-acre property hunk that we go to a lot. It's owned by my brother-in-law, actually, and it's kind of our little secret place in the woods when we need to decompress and get away, and I needed to do that. I've been working really hard on this podcast, and I just started another podcast on another topic, and while I'm having a ball doing that, I mean, it's taken its toll on me. I mean, I wake up, folks, at 4 a.m, and my mind is racing. I can't wait to get up and get started on the blog, on the roadtrekking.com blog, to write, to work on these podcasts. It's crazy. So on Jennifer's advice, we just disconnected everything after we posted the last episode of the podcast, and we took off for the woods and had a ball. Now, I still write out there. I bring my laptop. I think I'm more creative, actually, outside. So we do a lot of boondocking. And so there's dispersed boondocking, there's wilderness boondocking, and then there's another sort that I don't know how that fits. I just call it overnight parking. That's like the Walmart boondocking where, you know, you don't have a hookup, but you have a you can park and sit in their parking lot. And if they let you do it there, they let you. Many most Walmarts will let you by corporate policy. Some communities prohibit it, but where you can camp there overnight, spend the night parked there. Without any hookups. So that's kind of the third type. But all of those fit the general definition of boondocking. But by its very name, boondocking, out in the boondocks, I think most of us associate it with getting away from the crowds and the campgrounds and the hookups, getting off the grid and far out there away from everybody. So what do you do out there? Well, we always are asked that, you know, and I got to tell you, it isn't very exciting. It really isn't. And even this time of year, we went, here it is as we do this podcast. This is almost the very end of October 2014. And the leaves have pretty much now fallen off the trees. The forest is starting to get the winter look about it. And it was getting cold. It was in the lower 30s at night. But what do you do? It isn't that pretty. Why do you go up there? What's it all about? Well, we just love it. I brought a tape recorder with me, and I thought maybe I would share that with you a little bit of what we kind of do out there and why we like boondocking so much. So I took the tape recorder and I just turned it on while Jennifer and I were out there. Hey, Road Trekkers! Thanks for joining us. We
are boondocking. We spent the weekend boondocking in the woods. People always say, what do you do when you're boondocking in the woods? Well, what is boondocking? Tell them what that means.
That means we don't have a hookup.
That means no electricity outside.
No water.
No water, because we don't need it. We have the Road Trek e-truck, so we have our own water. Almost all Class B RVs. There's our dog, Ty. He's with us. Hi, Ty. Welcome. He's wondering who I'm talking to. And then we have our own electricity or solar. We have all those extra batteries. And we don't need any commercial power.
That's right. And I love it, being the peace, the quiet, up in the middle of the woods. It's wonderful.
We're in some relative's property. It's just wild woods. There's a trail that goes in, a rough trail that just enough room for our road trek. And there's nothing around. There's a river, the Rifle River up in northern Michigan. This is late October, and the leaves are all down off the trees. You can hear them just walking. We're on a little trail that cuts through the woods. The leaves are all gone. We are a couple weeks late from that. But what we like to do a lot when we're boondocking is hike. We just do hikes.
It's just fun to take a walk and see what we're going to see.
We scared up a ruffled grouse, a partridge, a few minutes ago. And you can see deer feeding down by the river. We have a campfire site at this little clearing that we park on. It's right on an overlook on a bend in this Rifle River, which is a really nice trout stream in northern Michigan. And it's just the two of us and our dog. That's all we need.
That's all we need. And I brought food, so we're good there, and we're just enjoying this.
So we haven't had any electrical hookups. We got in here on Thursday, and we'll be on this trip until Sunday. And we ran our heater last night. The heater, it got down into the low 30s outside, and inside with our heater, it was comfortable. We kept it at about 65. Actually, we had to get up in the middle and turn it down.
Yeah, it was too warm.
It was too warm. So, you know, if you like being outside, if you like being in the wilderness, if you like being away from people, all the hustle and bustle, I can only recommend you try boondocking if you've never done.
And you can boondock, and then you can go where people are. You can have it both ways.
Yeah, we have to go to Walmart today.
Bounce
find a
back
Walmart.
And forth.
We have to find a Walmart, don't we?
I think we do.
Okay, we got a couple things we need to get, so that's what we're going. Well, we've reached the end of this little trail that we're on, so we're gonna look at the river, which is about 100 feet down below us. We'll put some photos up with the show notes here. But that's a typical boondocking weekend from us, just getting away from everybody, sleeping with the windows open and looking at the stars.
Yes, I did. I had the window open just a little bit, and the stars were beautiful last night.
Yeah, when I say the window's open, I mean the drapes aren't pulled. We don't have to worry
about it. We don't have to pull the drapes.
Yeah, it's a little cold to leave them all open, although we did have to crack it because it got so warm with our heater. But that's us in the woods of Ogemaw County on a boondocking weekend.
Under that tie, what?
I'm going to call the dog here. Hey, Ty.
All right, so you know why we had to go to Walmart, by the way. This is telling you, if you think we're really roughing it out there, remember, we're in a little motorhome. We had to go to Walmart because Jennifer forgot her hair dryer. And we figured, we might as well pick up a hair dryer for the RV. So, you know, there you go. It's not roughing it. I mean, there's nothing. We have everything we need, and it really is comfortable. So that's why we went to Walmart up there. Hey, this portion of Road Trekking the RV podcast is brought to you by the Good Sam Club. And Good Sam Club was created over 50 years ago to help folks like you get the most out of your travels. And today, with over 1.5 million members, the club provides the resources you need and a friendly community to back you up, making the journey that much more fun and exciting. Jennifer and I are members of Good Sam. In fact, we joined as soon as we got an RV, and the Good Sam Club is well known for saving RVers money with member discounts on RV accessories and installations and campgrounds, even fuel. Good Sam helps keep more money in your pocket. It's also there to help support you on the road, offering services like roadside assistance, warranties, and insurance, and more, all designed by RVers like you. And when you join Good Sam Club, you gain access to free publications, expert technical advice, how-to videos, a library of articles that make RVing easier. Good Sam gives you the opportunity to learn more about RVing as you get the most out of your time on the road. Again, 1.5 million members. They got to be doing something right. You can do more than just share the road with Good Sam. You become part of the largest RV community where members connect to share information, advice, meet up for social events, and even volunteer together. Good Sam Club. It's about more than just savings. It's about community, helping your fellow RVer, getting support while on the road, and learning more about RVing. Good Sam Club. Good friends. Good fun. Great savings. Join today.
You're listening to Road Trekking, the podcast. You can find show notes, links to resources and websites Mike and his guests mention, and background material, videos and photos on the roadtrekking.com RV travel blog. And you can also send Mike a voice question to answer on the podcast. From the blog, just click the send voicemail button. That's at roadtrekking.com. The small motorhome RV travel blog. Travel blog.
You've got them. Mike and his network of road trekking reporters have the answers.
Here's one of our listener RV questions of the week.
Hey Mike, enjoy your articles and videos. They're really good. My wife are learning a lot. We're kind of just lurkers. We don't have a camper yet, and we're still debating on the payback of a camper versus, you know, actually just finding a low, high gas mileage car versus the cost of owning a motorhome, a Class B motorhome, and the cost of gas. And we'd love to hear you compare the two sometime, maybe in an article or a show.
Well, thank you very much. Joining me to help answer that question is the COO and CFO, the Chief Financial Officer of roadtrekking.com.
My
wife, Jennifer. Well, that's a pretty good question, isn't it?
Yeah, that is a very interesting question.
Well, how do we compare the two? Let me start off with a couple of things. One, it's going to cost you more for insurance for a motorhome, for an RV. And not as much as you'd think. If you were going to do a full year like we do, I think it's a little over $1,000 for the year for our motorhome. But you don't have to do that. You can actually just do, you know, 6 months, 3 months. Most insurance companies, RV insurance companies, let you write just seasonal if you're not going to be using it all year. So that's one thing, but it does cost a little bit more for that. What are some of the other things, Jennifer? He said, you know, driving around in a car, I suppose you could get a conversion van as well, or a motorhome, but let's talk about a car.
Well, I think you really need to drive a Class B. You need to take it out, ride in it, see the comfort level, and see how easy it is to handle. Just see if you like that. And then your car, I don't know what kind of car you're driving. I don't know if you're driving something small for gas mileage, something in between, or something big and luxurious. We prefer riding in our Class B over our car. We find it much more comfortable for a long trip. Oh, there's no comparison. Having the RV is just wonderful.
Yeah, it's so much comfort. We like to pull over in a rest area. You could take a nap. But, I mean, you've got your own bathroom with you. You have the comfort of a refrigerator with all sorts of snack food and junk food. And often you'll get up and go and cut us up an apple. You've got a little secret on apples. Why we eat apples. They're really good for energy.
I don't know what it is about being on a long car trip. It seems like you get hungry. You want something to munch on. At least I do.
So it's really nice. You can have things in your refrigerator, nice munchies as you drive in an RV. Mileage, he talks about mileage. And that's a consideration. Although most Class Bs get really pretty good mileage. We are in a Sprinter, a Road Trek E-Trek. And it's a little different than most of the RVs, because it has eight batteries, eight coach batteries. Our unit does. And that's a lot of extra weight. I just filled up this morning, and I always check my mileage every trip, and I get between 15 and 17 miles a gallon with that E-Trek. That's not great. Some of the Sprinter models get upwards of 20, 22. The one we had before got about 21. Mine doesn't, because we have all that extra with the batteries. And also, I had a lot of water in it. We were going back. We were boondocking, so I stocked it up with water. Usually, we just don't put the water in until we're at a campground, and that way you don't have to drive with all that extra weight. What other factors between a vehicle and a RV?
There's the cleanliness. I don't know what kind of hotel rooms that you book, if you're trying to save money or if you go all out and go for a really nice room. We bumped into a national TV crew on one of our trips, and they had gotten bed bugs.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. That was it. Covering Punxsutawney Phil, Groundhog Day, last February. And they had been at a well-known national chain that's known for being pretty luxurious.
One of my favorite. Whenever we're on the road, I like to stay with that chain because the beds are comfy and it's really a good chain.
And they got bed bugs, the whole crew.
It's just luck of the draw and whatever they're doing now not to kill bed bugs. They seem to be out there. When you have your own rig, you've got your own nice, clean place to stay.
And one of our regular readers on Road Trek, as a matter of fact, got a Road Trek, the Road Trekking Facebook page. He got a Road Trek, he and his wife, because they travel around. I think they do crafts and things like that. And they do those reenactments of Revolutionary War. You know, everybody has a hobby, and they have a lot of those craft shows. They dress up in revolutionary costumes, so they like to do that, and they travel a lot, and they got bed bugs at a hotel chain, brought them back to their house. They had to fumigate the house, thousands and thousands of dollars. Now they will never stay in a hotel. That's how they got into RVing.
Also, what you can bring. I like the Road Trek. We leave rain jacket, warm jacket, spring jacket, all different kinds of outerwear, as well as clothing. You can bring more clothes. It's easy to get to your things, and you're just prepared.
I think your advice on trying it out, trying before buying, is really, the downside of that is it's hard to rent one. They really are in demand.
Yeah, I know. We're lucky. We have one place in Michigan where people can rent one, but they got to speak up. I mean, got to speak about a year in advance, I believe.
Yeah, yeah, they do. And it's very hard. And a lot of dealers don't like to rent them because, frankly, they sell so well that they don't need that income with them.
And I have said before, we would have bought a Class B sooner if we could have rented one and used it. But we have a very, very hairy sled dog, and you weren't supposed to take dogs.
Yeah, so you can
in a rental.
Now, there's a difference too. The caller asked about, you know, he's not sure what to get. There's also, he's going to hear people talk about conversion vans versus Class B motorhomes, and I should just explain the difference. They're indistinguishable sometimes at a glance, or if you see them go by, because most vehicles are small enough they can fit in your driveway. They're a little bigger than the standard cargo van. They tend to have roofs that are high. They look a lot on the outside sort of the same, but they're big differences. The conversion vans and the Class B motorhomes have, typically they all start with a typical size van frame, but the conversion van is constructed as a regular transport van with maybe a more luxurious interior. The Class B motorhome is constructed specifically as a recreational vehicle. And conversion vans, they may have everything from bench seats that can be folded into beds, or captain chairs that swivel, even little tables that fold down. But a Class B basically is a van-sized RV with a small permanent kitchen, a sleeping area, usually a small bathroom. They have the RV has a complete electrical and plumbing. The conversion vans are kind of add-ons to everything. So those are the things you got to look for.
And a factor for us is we want something that we can park in our driveway. I don't ever want to live any place where we can't keep our Class B motorhome in our driveway.
And actually, we use our Class B. I do. It's our second vehicle. I use it to run errands in. I find it very comfortable. I prefer driving it to our car, the car we have.
It doesn't say much for our car. We're kind of knocking our car, but you get spoiled by the comfort so quickly.
Yeah. Well, we hope that answers your question. And we want to, if it raises more questions, you can just send us a note. But thank you, dear, for your assistance with that.
I hope that was helpful.
I think it was.
Want to be part of the podcast. Ask a question. Leave a comment.
Look on the right side of mikesroadtrekking.com blog and click the send voicemail button. We welcome listener voices and love your questions.
Mike's got news.
RV news, travel news, tips and trends about the small motorhome lifestyle.
Here's the road trekking news of the week.
Well, we've got some statistics to go on about RV sales again. They are continuing to pick up speed. And I mentioned a couple of weeks ago how it was Class B vans actually that had the biggest percentage gain of everything this year. But the RV industry is booming and the sales reports are pretty stunning. But the thing that I wanted to talk about this week is a story that was actually on CNBC. And it was on the whole issue of who's buying an RV. And you might be surprised to know that the fastest growing demographic group is not the seniors or the baby boomers. Now, if you look at the percentage of ownership, boomers are the largest demographic of the RV owner industry. That's according to the Recreation Vehicle Industry Association. But which segment of the whole RV ownership is growing the fastest? It's, here you go, you ready? Age 35 to 54, younger consumers who want to be active and outdoors, they are the fastest growing demographic that we're seeing. So the age is coming down. Boomers still make up the biggest part of it. And the boomer generation now, or this one that we have, is the most affluent retiree generation that we've ever seen. But if you look carefully at the sales statistics, dealers will tell you that they're seeing more and more people 35 to 54 that are coming in and buying RVs. The other part of the news I want to pick up is the long-range weather forecast from, ta-da, are you ready for this? From who else but the Farmer's Almanac. I told you earlier in the program that we saw a lot of people on the highways lately, a lot of people heading to the warmer climates. October's when the annual snowbird migration really gets underway. And there's RVs everywhere out there. So the winter predictions are out. And the old Farmer's Almanac says that we're going to see, are you ready for this? Temperatures in the next year to be still colder. Colder than normal. Warmer than normal as we get into the summertime season of 2015. But the winter of 2014-15 is going to be largely across the country colder than normal. Now, we had a terrifically cold winter last year, that Arctic vortex. Remember that? This winter, the central and eastern U.S. will see colder than normal temperatures, says the Farmer's Almanac, while the western third of the country will have a little bit of above average temperatures. As for snow, the central part of the country from the Dakotas down to Texas, and then east through Georgia and South Carolina can expect cold, dry weather. The Corn Belt region will experience the cold with heavier snowfall. And in general, the old Farmer's Almanac predicts heavy snowfall for the northeast part of the country, although there are also parts of New England, western Massachusetts, southern Vermont, New Hampshire, most of Maine that they say will be a little drier than normal. Florida, as we head down south, will likely get more precipitation than normal this year. Out west, they're saying milder temperatures, below average snowfall more or less, although the western part of New Mexico down into westernmost parts of Texas could see cold, snowy conditions, and you can expect above average temperatures and above average precipitation in most of Washington state. So there is your winter forecast. Colder, more snow in the Midwest and down south, normal temperatures, but way down into Florida, a little bit more rain than normal. Now, this, of course, is from the Farmer's Almanac. Can we trust them? Are they right? Well, I don't know if that's true or not, but that is what they say. It's coming our way. So there you go.
Traveling with technology. It's time now for our RV Tech Tip of the Week.
This tech tip is for those who use Macintosh computers. Sorry, you Android and PC users, but this is one of the coolest utilities that I have ever seen, and it is really great for the RV life. This is what is known as a typing shortcut utility. It's called Text Expander, and I have a free offer for you. For the first five people who write me, I'll tell you about that in a second. But this thing is really cool. I've been using it about a month. And what this does is it lets you type more with less effort. It saves your fingers and your keyboard. And it gives you these keyboard shortcuts that you say, and you can put in frequently used text. You can put in pictures, whether it's a paragraph or a boilerplate. We all have these things that we're writing all the time. And if you're like me, I'm driving around the RV, I'm kind of bouncing around, and I'm often fat fingering stuff and making a lot of typos. Everybody's making fun of my typos all the time. Well, since I got Text Expander, I don't have that problem because I look at my email and there's really, I'm saying kind of the same thing. And so I can type in correctly with no typos in Text Expander, a snippet is what they call it. And then when I want to put that in a document, I just enter a little code, a couple characters, and bam, it prints out fine. You can have little blank spaces and you can put stuff in there, but it turns the typos that keep tripping you up into these little snippet triggers. It magically unfumbles my fingers. I mean, it is the coolest thing I've ever seen. And I've got probably 75 now snippets in there. I get a lot of email from viewers of my videos and from people who listen to the podcast, people who read the blog, and many ask the same thing. And so I can easily personalize it and then send them in the boilerplate information that everybody gets. If you are in a business and you're working on the road, or if you just, you know, send a lot of emails, this is a really handy thing. You can download a free trial. I'll put a link with the show notes, and it costs like $34 to buy it for your computers, and it is a really good thing. But here's the deal. I like this so much. I talked to the people that make it, and they've given me five free copies that I can give away. So there you go. How's that for a road trekking podcast offer? Five free copies of this thing. So the first five people who write me and say, I want Text Expander, I will send you a code, and then you can enter that code and you can download a full working copy of it for yourself for absolutely nothing, for free, for the first five people. That's all they gave me is five. But this is a really neat thing, and you can follow the link on the roadtrekking.com blog, the episode notes, and you'll see exactly how I use it, and you can click on it and get some more information. There's even a little video, but I want to give away five copies of it. I like it so much, they gave me five to give away, so I am going to give them away. That's for those of you who use Mac. This works on Mac computers. There is a version that works on the iPad and the iPhone, but I use this primarily on my laptop and on my desktop. That's where I do most of my on-the-road work from. And I also have it on my iPhone and my iPad, and I'll tell you how you can get that too on the show notes. But this is really a cool utility that I found. Saves me a lot of time and those fat-fingered mistakes. Text Expander. Check out the show notes. First five people who write me, I'll send you a free copy. Sponsoring this part of the Road Trekking RV Podcast is Van City RV, serving shoppers from the center of the country in St. Louis, Missouri. Van City RV is one of America's top dealers, specializing only in Class B motorhomes from the three major small motorhome manufacturers. They have them in stock, new and used, on display, and Van City loves to deal. They sell only Class Bs. The owner, Ray Dwyer, is the dean of Class B sales in North America. Nobody knows small motorhomes better than Ray and his crew. They not only stock the new models, like I said, they have a large inventory of used Class Bs as well, and they have a great fly and drive program. Shoppers from all over the U.S. choose Van City RV. They fly into St. Louis, they get picked up at the airport, taken to Van City, and then they pick up their new unit. I've been there. I've been to Van City RV. I've met Ray and Danny and the crew, and they have one of the top service centers in the country. They've worked on my road trek motorhome, and I can personally attest to their skill and expertise. Here's Danny with this week's special.
Hey, Mike, just got back from Camp Retreat with the kids this weekend. What a great time. I got a not-so-scary deal for your listeners, though. I got a 2014 Road Trek RS Adventurous. Was $126,995. With all discounts, it can be bought at $111,995. Give us a call at 1-800-467-3905 or check it out at VanCityRV.com.
That's 1-800-467-3905, VanCity RV, where you'll always find the best Class B for you at the right price. And there are never any hidden fees. Check them out, VanCityRV.com, and tell them you got news of them from Road Trekking, the Road Trekking podcast. They say they'll give you a special price if you say that. One of the things RVers need is connectivity when you're out there. And a lot of us use cell phones, and there's data cards, there's cell phone boosters. But if you're in a small motorhome, and if you like to boondock and get far off the beaten path like we do often in national parks or in wilderness areas, you're going to run into times when there is no internet connectivity. And if you're on the road a lot, you need the internet. You got to pay bills with it. You keep in touch with the kids and the grandkids. How do you do it? Well, the way a lot of people do it is with satellite internet. And to help us sort through all of the options that we might have for internet connectivity, we're excited to have on the other end of our Skype connection here, Barb Nolly from Tucson, Arizona. She's with mobileinternetsatellite.com. I'll put a link up to her website on our show notes for this episode. But Barb, first of all, welcome to Road Trek on the podcast.
Well, thank you. I have a very dear friend who has a Road Trek, and he loves it.
Yeah, a lot of people do it. Well, we're talking about not just Road Treks, but anybody who does a lot of RVers and like to go off the grid or the beaten path. Mm-hmm. The only option out there sometimes is satellite technology. Now, we should point out, first of all, satellite technology for the internet is a lot different than satellite technology for television.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's two-way instead of one-way, and that's the biggest difference right there. And it means you have a transmitter, and that makes it more important to make sure you point that dish well so you don't create a lot of interference.
So if you want to have television and you want to have internet, you basically need two dishes, correct?
You do. Yeah, absolutely do. When we were full-time RVers, we traveled with two dishes all the time.
So let's talk about those dishes. How big are they?
Well, the internet dish, the Starband, which is what we deal with these days exclusively, is about 39 by 24 inches.
Okay, so you got to have some storage room for it.
Absolutely. Although what we would do is just lay that dish face down on the bed. You take the arm off for travel, which has your transmitter connected and your receiver. But we would just lay a blanket on the bed, put that dish there, the arm right next to it, and problem solved. You rarely use the bed when you're driving.
Many of us have boxes, cargo boxes. I know they'll fit in there. And yep. Some of the new Sprinter models of Class B motorhomes have a kind of an extended area in the back. I know our friend Camp Skunk does that. And lots of, and of course, if you have a bigger RV, it's not a problem. So what is involved in getting internet connectivity when you are on the road? You can't get it while you're driving, right? You got to be actually stationary and aim it. Tell us the process.
Absolutely. Well, I think it's important to first distinguish between consumer versus commercial satellite. Consumer satellite's affordable. Commercial satellite for most of us is not affordable. It's you get guaranteed speeds, which you don't get with consumer, but it really is quite expensive. Another important distinction is rooftop versus tripod. Again, cost is the biggest difference, but also flexibility. With a rooftop, you can't park in the trees.
Right. So let's talk about the tripod system. And we can't do it while we're driving in a row, but we get in a campsite or we're out in the middle of wherever. Do we just set it up and we're good to go? We point to the south, to the north. Do we have trees in the way? What are some of the things to consider about that?
Well, if you're going to be in an area with a lot of trees, there is a kind of a special compass that will cite elevation as well as the azimuth direction that you have to point in, which is, in general, the southern sky. And this little special compass will actually help you find the hole in the trees. So, kind of a nice little addition. For those of us that used to spend, we're now fixed, but we're still in the desert, trees aren't an issue. And so a little Boy Scout compass will do the job. Will do the job quite well.
So we park, we whip out the satellite, put it on the tripod, and point it south. We can either use the compass or not to find the connectivity there. Then what's involved? There's a wire that runs into the RV.
Right, right. There are a couple of settings you make on the back of the dish, but those are real easy to determine by your current location. Zip code, longitude, and latitude both work. Once you have found that meter, found the satellite, and a meter helps. Now, there's actually, depending on whether you have a meter and what type, you may have to hook up your cables and power on the modem and the computer before you can actually point and find the satellite.
So we do that. What's the average time length? How long does it take to set up and get that that internet connection working by satellite?
15 to 20 minutes is what we hear from our customers.
That's not bad. And there's all sorts of, as you said, there's a meter that you can use to help, but there's a compass that can help find trees if you're in the forest. Inside the rig, the wire goes into a modem, is that correct? And then
yes.
From the modem to the computer?
Or usually to a wireless router.
So you can hook up your cell phone and your tablet and your smartphone.
Absolutely, anything that's Wi-Fi enabled.
So we have this set up and we bring it in and out every night. How fast is the connection with satellite internet? And who's it not good for? And who is it good for? I do a lot of video, but and audio files. Will it send those?
It will, but there is a limited amount of bandwidth available each week. And incidentally, you don't bring it in at night. You set it up and you leave it in place until you're moving down the road.
How fast is the speed?
You're looking at maximum, and all satellite services report in maximum. A maximum of anywhere from half a megabit or 500 kilobits per second to a meg and a half if you're looking at Starband. HughesNet has some higher speeds, but they're also higher costs, and we really don't recommend HughesNet anymore for a variety of reasons. The primary one is that HughesNet is phasing that type of satellite, which is called Ku-band, the one that you can travel with, phasing it out. They have outsourced it to VARs and severely limited resources. So yeah, there's higher speed services available, but it's not as reliable as Starband, so we really don't recommend it anymore.
All right. So Starband, a meg and a half, maybe as much as entry-level cable, or certainly DSL, entry-level DSL. So that's not a bad right. speed. You can do a ton. You wouldn't want to stream movies through it, that's for sure.
No, if you stream movies, you would use up your weekly allocation in, probably two or three movies.
How much is that allocation, and what are the costs? Well, let's talk first about the cost of the equipment. What do we need as a minimum, and then maybe you might want to offer with some of the better options?
Well, I thought about this a little bit, and you're looking at a pretty wide range. You can get in with all the equipment you need, and there are some gotchas, for about $400. Or you can go all out, get the Cadillac of meters and that deluxe compass I mentioned, and now you're looking at closer to $1,600-$1,700, and everything in between.
Okay, so from $400 to $1,600, these are one-time costs, but there is some recurring cost, and that's the bandwidth, how much traffic we do with our satellite. So walk us through that. How much time do we have? How much can we download? And what are the monthly fees for that?
Well, on the low end, you're looking at $60 a month, and it's up to 500 kilobits per second down, 100 kilobits per second up. You, with that plan, you get about a gigabyte down on, and in fact, let me do a real quick check here, because I never remember the slow speed, because almost no one gets that low end plan. Let's see, it is 1 gigabit down and 250 megabytes up every week.
So that's $60 a month. Then what comes next?
In the middle, we've got what's called the Nova 1000, which is 1,000 kilobits per second maximum, or 1 megabit per second. That one's $80 a month, and you get twice the bandwidth down. You get 2 gigabytes a week, 400 megabytes up.
And then there's obviously the deluxe package.
The high-end plan is the Nova 1500, and as you might have guessed, it's 1.5 megabits per second maximum. That one's 120 a month. Oh, and it's also 256K up, so it's twice the previous plan on the up. You get 5 gigabytes a week in bandwidth down and 1 gigabyte up, and I'll tell you, we used it for years and years on the road, and we don't stream a lot of video, you know, a YouTube here and there. My husband would watch a little bit of sports here and there, but we never exceeded our allocation. That was plenty.
So $120 is probably, most people won't even need that much. So $80 right. to $50 is right in there. Now, this is obviously something that people who travel a lot in very rural areas or areas where it's pretty hard to get Wi-Fi or anything would be interested in. They don't have to do this on a yearly basis. Can they do this month by month?
They can now. This is a brand new change where we have no contract with Starband. So you sign up and you can turn it on and off at will. They have what's called vacation hold. So you pay $15 a month for vacation hold, your email still stays active. The free web page stays active if you use it. Not many people use that free web page, but if you want it, it'll stay active for $15 a month. And then you can be reactivated a phone call away.
So the idea is you set out, you're going to be gone for a couple of months, and you know you're going to be in a rough area. You subscribe, you take 2 months worth, and then you go idle and don't use it again till the next time you go out. And when you think about it, you know, it's probably most people I know who are paying cable are paying pretty much about $120 a month for cable internet. And of course, you might have cable, you know, phones and cable TV as well. But still, it's not tremendously more than what you would pay at home. It's more, but not tremendously more.
Yeah, it's definitely the most expensive internet option, but it's also the one that will essentially go anywhere you can go.
Well, I know I'm heading your way, and I will be talking to you again. I'm looking at next year's schedule already, and we do love to boondock, and there were enough times this year that I did not have connections, and I could have actually stayed out longer, because I do rely on the internet to do my job while I'm on the road RVing, and that would have let me enjoy Glacier National Park for another week. Instead, I had to cut that short because I had to do some online work. So, Barb, I will be in touch with you. And I thank you for a quick overview of what's involved in satellite internet connectivity. It's certainly a possible. And the only question a lot of people have is which plan to use. I will send them to your website. We'll put a link up to it at the show notes on this episode. And that is mobileinternetsatellite.com. Barb Nolly has been our guest. And Barb, thank you so much for all of the valuable information about internet satellite.
Well, you are very welcome, Mike. Thank you for asking me.
What's on your RV bucket list? Maybe the place Mike has for you now on this week's Road Trekking Destination of the Week.
Well, one of the places that has a very special hold on me is the Everglades area of Florida. It's a wild, huge place filled with birds and wildlife as diverse as the flooded cypress and sawgrass prairies that make up the largest subtropical wilderness in the United States. Did you know that about the Everglades? Every time I am in South Florida, I budget time for the Glades. I've ridden my bicycle along an 8-mile paved loop. If you've never done that, bring your bikes. Go to a place called Shark Valley. You can cruise literally yards away past snoozing gators with their huge tooth-filled mouths open to cool off. You get some great pictures there. Don't get too close because they can run 20 miles an hour, but you can get close enough to get some photos of them. There are airboat rides. There's nature walks where you can actually get wet and wade in the swamp. It's surprisingly clean. It's not mucky at all. It's very clean. And there's fishing there, not to be believed. It's that awesome. Now, the winter dry season starts in December and goes till April. That's the best time. And, of course, that's when everybody's down there to get out of the cold of the north. April is when it starts to rain again. That's the best time, December to April, for wildlife viewing in the park. Weather conditions are really good down there, usually very comfortable during the winter. Standing water levels are lower than normal. That means wildlife is going to congregate at central water locations. That same place I told you about, Shark Valley, is a great place. The Anhinga Trail at Royal Palm, the Eco Pond in the Flamingo area are popular areas where you can see gators and birds and stuff. I just really like, one other part I really like is the Big Cypress National Preserve. It's right part of the Everglades, really. But the Big Cypress National Preserve is 729,000 acres of Everglades. Crystal clean fresh water throughout there, and it plays a huge role in the health of the entire ecosystem of South Florida. But you can drive it. There's a 24-mile loop road that runs south and east off of Highway 41 at about mile marker 59. It takes you a couple of hours. It's dirt and gravel, well-maintained, but it's meant for very slow travel. I don't know whether I would want to take a Class A motorhome down there, but it's fine for Class Bs or Class Cs or a car. Probably a little too rough for a Class A. And once you commit to this road, by the way, you're limited because there's very few spots to turn around. But it's 24 miles around, and you'll see mammals and birds and reptiles, very unique to Florida's climate. If you want to camp down there, a place I really, really like a lot, is the federal campground that's right off 41. There are several of them, really, up and down Highway 41 that runs from Maples to Miami, the old Miami Trail. Look off 41. There's several federal campgrounds. Almost all of them have openings every day. I will put up some notes and some photographs on the roadtrekking.com show notes page for this episode, and you can check it out there. But you'll love it. The Everglades and the Big Cypress National Preserve. Great spots.
Traveling North America in a Class B motorhome.
This has been Road Trekking the Podcast with journalist Mike Wendland.
Got a question for next week? Click the send voicemail link on the roadtrekking.com blog.
Till then, we'll see you out there. Road Trekking. Road Trekking.
Go. Another edition of Road Trekking the Podcast in the proverbial can. I hope that you enjoyed this. Please do me a favor, if you will. Would you spread the word about this? Tell other people who are into RVing to tune it in. So simple to get. Just go to roadtrekking.com, look under the podcast links, and you'll find all sorts of information there, how you can listen to it right on the computer. But everybody else, you want to download it on an app. You know, if you have an iPhone, an Apple product, their podcast app is a great way to go. If not, I recommend Stitcher. It works on Apple, and it works, of course, on Android devices as well. And do us a big favor, will you? It's really hard to get noticed when you're starting off a podcast like this. And what really helps more than anything else is if you would just like us and subscribe to this podcast. There's a place there where you can review it. And it really helps if you put a review in. We really would ask you to do that. And it just helps us be found by the next people looking for information on RV. There's so many podcasts out there. We'd like to kind of stick up above the head. Hey, I got some news I want to pass along. This just came as we were actually putting this episode to bed here, but this comes from our Facebook page. If you've ever been over there, it's facebook.com/groups/roadtrekking. facebook.com/groups/roadtrekking. And what I want to pass along to you is that there's a really cool offer from Jim Hamill. Jim is the president of Road Trek Motorhomes, and he has announced a great incentive program for the Thanksgiving season. If you buy a new Road Trek between October 23rd of 2014 and November 23rd of 2014, Hamill himself, the president, will send you a check from Road Trek for $2,500 once you've submitted proof of delivery to the factory. You can find the details on our special Facebook group, but that is a great deal. Besides all the good deal you'll get from the dealer, he'll take off, he'll give you a check for $2,500 after you buy it. So check that out. Please use the blog roadtrekking.com to stay in touch with us. Send us your questions. Use that voicemail link, and you may be featured in next week's episode. Remember, we produce a new episode every Wednesday right here. I'm Mike Wendland on behalf of everybody who's been a part of the blog and our Facebook group and who've tuned in today. I want to say thank you for being in that listening audience. See you next week.